Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spark Radio Show, filled with strategies, possibilities, actions, resources, and knowledge that may be the spark of a better solution to ignite a positive change in your life. The number to call if you have questions for Melanie or any of our guests is area code 347-215-8390. Now, here's your host, Ms. Melanie.
I love the sound of that crackling fire. I just sometimes wish it would end sooner when I push the button. I don't know why it's still spinning, but there we go. And for most of the United States, hearing that warm crackling fire is a good thing. Welcome to Spark Radio. I am your host, Ms. Melanie, and I hope that wherever you are listening, you are warm right now. And for our friends in the Southern Hemisphere, I hope you're appropriately cool right now. It's exciting to be back with you, gearing up for an exciting lineup of authors and guests for 2014. I thank you for coming back with me. I've not had a live show of late because I have been recovering from a knee replacement. So I'm successfully healing my left knee and started at a 30-degree bend. I'm now up to 94 with a goal of 110. And I could flex, I think, I was at 15. I'm down to 2 in the straightening side. So if I reach that 110 bend, I'll be able to bicycle after I have my second knee replacement coming up on the 13th of February. So thanks for being with us and enjoying the recorded podcast from the last several years. And I am very to welcome an author whose first novel is being published and is in pre-release right now with a March publication date. She has a lot of exciting insights to share with you. So I would like to welcome to Spark Carol Denikis. Welcome, Carol.
Hi, Melanie.
Hi. I am so glad that we got this scheduled and we have a chance to talk about your book at this point, before it's actually published and people can get that I read it first opportunity with your book. Before we get started talking about the book, Rescuing Love, and about your experience in writing it and publishing it, as well as some other exciting things you have going on, rather than me introducing you, I will invite you to introduce yourself to my listeners.
Well, I'm native to the Midwest, lived all my life in the Midwest, in Iowa, actually, little towns. I grew up mostly around the Lime Springs, Cresco area, which is, you know, up pretty close to the Minnesota border. And I come from a very large family. I'm one of 14 siblings. And I have a BA in English from Luther College up in Decorah, Iowa. And currently I'm married and live in Dyersville. I have 3 daughters. And I guess I would say that writing has always been a really powerful part of my life, and I like working with other people and encouraging them to write as well. So thank you for having me on the show.
My pleasure, absolute pleasure. And as we have been talking about this interview and preparing for this interview, there are a number of different questions and processes, especially for people who may have a story to tell, but they're not sure they have a story to tell, or they're not sure about how to go about writing. And so, and of course, I just dropped my notes page. So I will, if you would read that first question that we agreed we'd start with, I will try to put my question pages back in order, Carol.
We were going to start with what are the major themes of my writing. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yep. Would you please?
First of all, this is my first book that's coming out, and the full release date is March 25th. In this pre-release time, it is still available for purchase through my publisher's online bookstore, but after March 25th, it will be available Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, or any bookstore, major retailer that you walk into, they could order it for you after that March 25th date. But I have a lot of unpublished works as well that I have worked on over the years, and I actually have that locked suitcase with them in it. And I have toted that little suitcase around forever. That it's probably like a 50-year-old suitcase because it was, you know, secondhand when I got it. But there's a theme that runs throughout all of my writing. So, and it's really about the struggle that leads up to, and then the happy ending that can happen in life. And I think a value that has really resonated in my life through the years is that if it's worth having, then it's worth the hard work of getting, or, you know, if you're going to create something, and then the hard work of keeping it alive, keeping it well, you know, keeping your relationship strong. If you value what you have, then you'll show that value by working hard to preserve it. And I think that's always been very important to me. And taking care of what you have includes that working hard to preserve our relationships that help make our lives meaningful.
And I think that speaks volumes, especially in the United States where divorce rates are so high, or people are surprised by that idea that you have to work at relationships. They're just, they don't stay magic and easy as you go through decades of marriage. And that idea of that commitment and perseverance that you talked about, those are all very, very strong themes. And so thinking about that's the themes of what you write about, what do you like to read?
You know, people ask me that a lot, and I have to confess that I really don't have as much time to read as I'd like to anymore. I used to read every night before I went to bed, and like for a couple hours. And I find myself, you know, between, you know, working my full-time job and then doing the writing, it really doesn't leave a lot of time for reading. But when I have the time, I have to say that I like something that just relaxes my mind and I don't have to concentrate too much on it. And, you know, so really I am quite a sucker for the romances. But I also like historical stuff. So, and it doesn't have to be romance for historical, but just history in general I like to read about. And, you know, with that, I guess I would broaden it to say that anything that involves the character struggling to overcome adversity, I just like to see that happen in that whatever relationship or situation that's going on. And I think then when you see that resolved and you get that happy ending, you think, oh, things can be right in the world. It just gives you a feel-good, you know, kind of feeling, and I like that at the end of the day.
In that feel-good, that inspiration is as we face our own struggles too, I think, that, oh, my gosh, if someone else could do it, then
yep.
I could do it. So thinking about the things that you enjoy reading, and I hear that, you know, that overcoming struggle and overcoming adversity. And so as you are writing, whether it's short stories or novels, are you writing with a particular audience in mind?
You know, I have tried in the past to do that, and it always seems to fall pretty flat for me as I'm critiquing it. So I really write for myself, and I just try to, you know, put my honest heart into it, and I hope that someone will appreciate the work at the end of it. But I'm pretty firm believer in staying true to myself and following your passions, and if you do that, then everything else will fall into place as it should. And it might not be exactly in the timing that you wanted it, or it might not be in the package as you thought it would be, but the outcome will still be perfectly as it should be. And when you're actually engaged in that outcome, you'll think, oh, this is perfect. I couldn't have planned it this well. You know, it'll just seem right.
I think that also speaks, my regular listeners will resonate with that follow your passions and being true to yourself as a passion test facilitator. And I coach people to do that, to follow those passions, and to truly trust that it's a right place, right time all the time, that when you're taking action, things will come together as they should. So it's exciting for me to connect with like-minded people and to share that perspective with my listeners. So we've talked now about a little bit about your audience. So for those people who are thinking, oh my gosh, I maybe have a story, I'm not sure how to go about it, can we talk a little bit about your writing process and what that looks like?
I will be very honest and say that I am really still evolving as a writer, even though I've been writing since, you know, I was a kid. I was 11 when I wrote my first historical romance and read it to my dad over the dinner table, and he was such a good sport to hear that, that book. But, you know, so now I'm not 11 anymore, and so it's you know, I'm 45, I'll confess that, and that's a lot of years to be writing, but I know I'm still evolving. And, you know, the process is, I think, is not set in stone for me. There's enough artist in me that I can't set it in stone. What I try to do is write every day, though, because you want to really get the habit going of writing every day. And I think that's, you know, I've been connecting with a lot of writers online, and that is one of the things that they talk about is how do you just sit down and do it when you have all these other things going on in your life, and you'll just really, 5 minutes, just tell yourself, 5 minutes, I'm going to do something on my writing every day, and then the habit will come. And, you know, for me, I'll say I'm going to do 5 minutes, and 8 hours later I'll look up and my kids are standing there, you know, hungry at the door going, what's for dinner? And, you know, the time has just flown by. And, you know, so I have to kind of temper that a little bit with being a mom and working full-time, and then so the writing is in place and things will shift around. I know as my children graduate and leave home, you know, and those kinds of things, you're always having those things shift in your life. So what I personally really, I really feel my strongest writing comes from midnight to 4 a.m. because I'm just tired enough that I'm not editing while I'm writing, I'm not critiquing it. And in the morning I can look at it, and it's raw writing. I mean, it's not perfect, but it's all the ideas are there, and then I can, you know, start the editing process and work with it. But you got everything out there. So I'm a pretty critical person, and when I sit down to write on a Saturday afternoon, I can just feel it. I'm writing, and I'm saying, oh, that's not the right word, or well, how else could I say that? It really doesn't matter. Just get the ideas down, and then you can come back and tweak it. So, you know, I usually, after my full-time, my day job is done for the day, I usually spend about 6 hours a night working in my office and writing. And so it's a lot of work, a lot of time. But I don't know that I have anything set in stone, you know, as far as my process. I'm still trying to find my way with it. This is my first published book, and I'm learning a lot along the way.
Well, I'm... Again, for my regular listeners, this is a repeat. And for those new listeners we have, when you talk about that critical mind intervening when you're alert, that logical hemisphere that begins to question, that there is research with the brain that shows when you are tired, the part that you use most all day, which is the logical reasoning parts of your brain, are tired. So the creative parts get to go, woohoo, party time, because the sensor's not there. So whether that's midnight till 4 or depending on someone else's schedule, it might be get up at 4 and write till 6, but or whatever you're doing that's creative. Because like you, Carol, I find if I'm designing new training or I've got a speech to give at a conference, my most creative ideas do come during the night when I'm not censoring myself. And I can then later tweak it. And I think you bring up that valuable point when we write and we are self-critical. It's so important just to write. I think Wayne Dyer says that as well. He writes every day just to write, to have the habit of writing and not critiquing, just writing and trusting that what is supposed to come will come. And that's, I think for a lot of us, is the challenge, is to really let go of that ego and the judgment around the writing process. Is there anything you want to add about that before we go on?
Yeah, I believe, I mean, I'm with you on everything that you said. I think that's wonderful. And it's nice to know that I'm just normal, that I can write, you know, after I'm tired. That makes perfect sense what you just said, because I always thought I was kind of an oddball. And I've always been extremely lucky. I think I've been lucky that I only need about 3 to 4 hours of sleep a night, and I'm functioning fine. So for people that need 10 hours of sleep a night, I don't know. I mean, it's a lot of time that you put into something like this.
It just may take them longer.
Yeah, exactly. You'd have to spread it out differently is all. But anyway, I'm with you. I believe everything that you said.
Good. Well, let's talk about where your writing comes from. And for a lot of writers, their personal life experiences play into their writing in some way. Is that also true for you, that your personal experiences have impacted your writing?
It is. And that's not to say that every theme that I write about is based on something that specifically, you know, happened in my life or to somebody that I know, because I have quite an imagination for, you know, making up stuff. But I would say that I had a lot of unhappiness as a child. And I think I do draw on those feelings when I'm working with my characters. You know, I have always believed that you can use your past as an excuse to move forward positively, or you can use your past to motivate yourself to overcome and accomplish things. And hopefully some of my characters will inspire readers as they go through their own tough times. I really want my writing to be about inspiring others. So hopefully that connection is made out there, you know, at some point.
Well, and I think having that as a guiding focus in your writing, that while you're really writing for yourself, that underlying passion you have for inspiring others through what they're reading, particularly your writing, is also a very powerful motivator as you continue to write. Is that true?
It is. You know, I just think our relationships are so powerful. And, you know, as we're thinking about what helps our lives to have meaning, and really for me it comes down to the different kinds of relationships. You know, it's not just one kind of relationship, but there's all kinds of them that we have in our daily lives, and they're so important. And anytime we can reach out to someone else and inspire them or work with them or encourage them, it's what we should do.
And I agree with you on that one. There's so many opportunities people have every day to connect, and they don't. And they miss those opportunities that are both gifts to themselves as well as gifts to others. So speaking of that every day and that passion and motivation in life, one of the things that can inspire writers are not only purely, but if you were to look back on those experiences you talked about, you know, drawing on the unhappiness and those feelings in your characters. What about the flip side of that, about the successes or accomplishments that you've had in your life? Are there any of those that you can draw on? And if so, what are they?
Yes. I think that, just as you say, when you asked me about my process of writing and how does that work, my person as a writer, you know, is still evolving as well. And, you know, that's my emotions, my feelings, and how I look at the world and how I look at myself. And that's, you know, I hope that continues to evolve. But one of the things that one of my accomplishments that is so dear to my heart that has really driven me throughout my adult life is me raising 3 beautiful daughters. I have 3 daughters, and one is away from home in college, and I have 2 left at home. And I'm just so thankful that I have them in my life, and I can't wait to see all that they accomplish as they grow. I hope, you know, you always hope as a parent, but I hope that I've given them some of what I needed when I was growing as a child. And, you know, sometimes I just watch and listen to them as they're, you know, talking and singing together or, you know, badgering each other. It doesn't matter, as they're interacting. And I'm really, truly amazed at the people that they've grown into. my daughters really inspire me. And I can't even tell you how much they inspire me just on so many levels. And I know that if I had not had them, I would not have had the strength to do many of the things that I have done in my life.
Wow. When they listen to this interview, that's probably going to be a very nice message for them to hear that you publicly are acknowledging their inspiration to you. Because often as parents, we forget to communicate that part as we're trying to deal with the day-to-day issues of adolescence and all that that brings in adolescent brains, and that's another show altogether.
I don't say it enough. You know, I'm glad to say it tonight, but I don't say it enough.
Well, there you go. Then you can say, here, listen to the interview, and they'll have a surprise tucked in the middle as they give you feedback. So being able to, and that echoes what you said earlier about relationships. It's about the people in your life, and that keeps coming through in your answers. And in the work that you've done in the past has also involved relationships and people and inspiring people in different ways. And thinking about that and inspiring people, again, one of the pieces that we put in the show notes was an opportunity for would-be writers or aspiring writers to get some ideas from your process or advice from you. So if there is an aspiring writer listening who said, what could you tell me as I'm thinking about this process of jumping in and writing a novel or a biography or some type of story?
I would echo the same advice that I got from a college professor. So I graduated from Luther with a BA in English, and I remember walking from the library down the sidewalk towards Maine one day, and there was one of my English professors, and we walked a ways together, and I said to her, I want to be a professional writer. And I really thought, this is the first person I'm telling this to, you know, credible person that can laugh at me or, not laugh at me. And I said this to her, and it felt very empowering, and she turned to me with this very serious stare and said, just remember, write what you know. And sometimes you have to live life and gain that knowledge before you can write what you know. And so don't be afraid to embrace life and to go down all these paths that you'll go down in your life. And if you truly, if that's really in your heart that you want to be a writer, when it's right, it will happen. And you'll be able to bring all those experiences together, and it will seem right, you'll seem prepared, it will all fall into place for you. But don't forget to live life so that you have something to write about. Write what you know. And at the time I thought, oh, I don't know how to take that, really. That was a lot. And but it quickly started to make a lot of sense to me as I, moved on from college and into, your real adult life and all the things that you're doing. And I thought, she's absolutely right. So that professor was Diane Scholl, just in case, for the record. So that's what I know. That's what I would tell people. Write what you know.
And write what you know. And acknowledge those people who've made a positive impact. Because so often, as teachers, professors, coaches, mentors, we say things and we're not sure they ever grow. We plant seeds, but we don't know where they go. So that idea of being able to acknowledge that very powerful idea, which she may not even realize was as powerful as it was in that moment. And so that's another, if you're listening and you've got somebody who's planted a seed that's really inspired you or motivated you, it's a great idea to just drop them a line and say thanks. Or, as Carol's doing, you could start a podcast and share it with the world that way. So connected to that, you've known that you've wanted to write for a long time. And we're going to get to, in a minute, why it's taken you so many years if you wrote your first story at 11. But I want to go back to, you just talked about your professor who had inspired you at Luther. Are there other people who also inspired you?
You know, I would say that people in general inspire me. I am a big people watcher. And sometimes people stop, you know, like my family will stop staring at those people. I'm like, I'm just watching, you know, researching and working, just watching them. Because I find interaction so fascinating between people. And it's a big joke in my family. I hate to shop, you know, from groceries to automobiles to clothes, it doesn't matter. I hate the thought of shopping. But I would go to a mall and sit on a bench and watch people. You know, that's very interesting to me. I could do that all day long and just sit there and take notes, you know. And so I think just people in general inspire me. And, you know, you never know. I mean, it's not just a certain type of person. It's all kinds of people. You know, and then you can move on from there and say, you know, of course I'm writing when I'm 11. I'm reading a lot when I'm a kid then. You know, reading was a huge part of my life. And I read lots of stuff, and I read, you know, very, very deep themes very early. But I remember there's one author, and her name is Kathleen Norris, and she wrote, you know, like the 1900, you know, 1900 to maybe 1940s, you know, kind of in that time period. But she was such an inspiration to me. I still have all of her books that I've read through the years, and I've collected a few as an adult. And her writing, she wrote fiction, and her writing really promoted values, including the sanctity of marriage. I wrote this down just so we could say this tonight. The nobility of motherhood and the importance of service to others. You know, at that time, she had those themes. And I think that those themes are so, you know, we still need to be talking about those themes today. Those are, you know, they transcend all generations, I think. And I remember her novels, you really would, it just cut right to the chase and what's really important about life. And even today, I can pick up one of her books and say, this book speaks to what I'm troubled about right now. And I can, you know, I read it and I go, absolutely, just need to be reminded, thank you, you know. And I think my favorite novels are the ones that are set in the 1920s and 1930s. And then again, you know, like we just talked about, I'm always inspired by my daughters in so many ways. And I'll say that a more contemporary author that I'm very enamored with is Nicholas Sparks. And, you know, when I first sent my book into the publisher and it came back accepted, they had a note that said, this strikes us as very Nicholas Sparks light. And so we think that this will be a very, you know, popular book. So it'll be good. And I remember thinking, oh, what do you mean? It's like Nicholas Sparks. I just wanted to be myself. But then I thought, well, but it fits into that type of stuff that I love, so it's okay, you know, it works. So I guess readers will have to decide if it's Nicholas Sparks like or not, but that's what the publisher said.
Well, there you go. And to have written in the style of or similar to the theme or whatever they were looking at with Nicholas Sparks, and he is a very, very powerful writer, and so
yeah.
Congratulations, that's a wonderful compliment.
Thank you.
In thinking about, as you're talking about reading, I'm so grateful my son loves to read. And he is 12, and he is currently reading A Tree Grows in Brooklyn, which I'm fessing up, I've never read it. And so he said there's some confusing parts in it. Well, we got to talking about, you know, clothing of that time period. So there are terms for clothing that we don't use anymore. And so we talked about, you know, if there's something like that, you don't know what it is, computers are wonderful. You just go to an online dictionary and type it in. And they'll have it, you can see a picture of what that kind of hat looked like or those kind of clothes look like. Because sometimes that can be distracting in the historical story if you don't have a context.
And I'm excited that he chose to read that book. It's not an assignment for a class. And so he will read non-traditional, not the typical boy stories necessarily. He's picked up some really powerful books, which is exciting.
You know, I remember as a kid reading books that, you know, there were words I didn't know what they meant or whatever. And there were two things I liked to do. One, as a kid, I loved to read the dictionary. I don't know why. I don't know where I got it from, but it was just very entertaining for me to read the dictionary. And I tried to memorize parts of it, which is an aside, but I guess I'm a weirdo. But I would either go there to figure it out, you know, or I used to make a list, and then I would follow my dad around while he was doing chores, and I would say, and now what's this word, and what's that word mean, and what's this? And he would be like, I don't know, can I have a context? What are you reading? You know, and he would, you know, patiently tell me, and it was really a bonding moment for us. You know, I at least for me, I thought, you know, I had his undivided attention, and I really felt like he really did support me in the stuff I was reading, and then again, you know, listening to my writing. And, you know, at 11, I'm not sure how good that novel was that I wrote, but, you know, he listened to it, he encouraged me, and I've always remembered that and valued that about him.
And you know what, it's unfortunate that in some cases that physical dictionary that you can flip to a page and find a word for the day, or, you know, that there's so many people who either haven't used a dictionary or they just do that, you know, define and pop it into Google. Although I'd much rather have them do that than just not know what a word means or understand about word parts so that you can be able to figure it out from context. And so those skills are so powerful. So we digress a little bit about the importance of understanding what you're reading. Because, if you miss out on especially historical novels, there's so much more there if you really know something about the economy of the time or the fashion of the time that brings even more to the story. Unfortunately, people who aren't reading those stories are missing out. Yes, I need to read A Tree Grows in Brooklyn with Alex. So I said, well, we can, you know, work through it together. I don't know how I managed to miss that one growing up, but I did. So as we're talking about those authors and that process of writing and how you had that support growing up, one of the things, especially related to passion, is, you know, if you like to do it when you were younger, probably something that you have a gift for in some way, shape, or form. And journaling is a way to just get into the habit of writing and documenting. Like, I don't know. I had a diary when I was younger. Like, you know, I don't know, junior high. I didn't keep it up, but I did have one in junior high. Did you have a diary or a journal when you were younger?
Oh, I'll tell you what I did. And if any of my family is listening, they'll laugh. If they did know, they'll laugh, I guess. But I wanted to be a spy when I was younger, like, you know, government spy, FBI.
Ooh.
And I had a spy notebook. And I used to hide and put, now, I mean, I'm sure I was an unpopular kid in my house, okay, but I used to hide where nobody could see me. But I could see a well-trafficked area. You know, it's like people would be coming and going a lot. And I would write down all the things that I saw people do wrong. You know, so my sister did this, my brother did this. I didn't have a plan for how I was going to use this or whatever. I'm not sure I was a real malicious kid, but I just wanted to be in the know, and I wanted them to know that I knew. So texting my spy stuff. And I, you know, pretty dumb, but that's what I used to do. And
that was great for your powers of observation.
Yeah, and it got me in trouble with my siblings sometimes, you know, when I divulged what I'd seen them do, stuff that they didn't want to get in trouble for. Like, I have it in here. So I have no idea where that spy notebook is. No doubt one of them destroyed it at some point because it was too incriminating, or perhaps it'll surface someday, you know, with lots of stuff in it. So...
Oh, my goodness.
But that's what I did, yeah.
Well, and what that made me think of was the sitcom that's out now called The Goldbergs, which is based on actual videotapes, because I think he's 7th grade, he's either 11 or 12-year-old boy got a video camera when they first came out in the 80s, and he would videotape everything from his dad to his underwear. His brother and sister doing things. They're like, stop. So they've made a sitcom about this, and at the end they show an actual clip related to that topic, because he has this wealth of stuff that he recorded. At the time, I don't know that he thought it would ever be a TV series, but if people haven't seen it, and if you've lived in the 80s, it's funny. And if you, my son likes to talk about, I'm a smother. I said, excuse me, I have never gone to a dance with you. I've never dressed like you. So it gives us things to talk about. But, you know, the things that we do when we're younger, we don't know how we can use them later in life. So there's probably a spy novel in there somewhere for you, Carol.
Yep, we got to find it first. But
well, one never knows. That inspiration can come from all sorts of places. We have a little over 20 minutes left in the show, so I'm going to give that phone number again. So if there's anyone listening who wants to call in and ask a question or share a story from their writing experience to get your insight on, that number is 347-215-8390. And people can also type a question in a chat room as well. And I will say, as I mentioned to you, Carol, earlier, that a lot of my regular listeners don't listen live. They download the podcast and listen later at their convenience. So we did put your contact information in the show notes, and we'll give it at the end of the interview as well. So if there's a question or they want to connect with you about writing, and particularly you have a group called the Red Barn Writers Guild. So that's not only for your writing, but that's also supporting other writers. Can you tell us about that?
I am the co-founder of this group, and so it's the Red Barn Writers Guild. And a friend and I, and she's a writer locally here around Dyersville, and we thought we would love to share our passion for writing with anyone else who wanted to write. And that didn't mean that you had to want to be, your goal was to be published. It could be, I just want to express myself. Or one of the gals in our group wants to get better at blogging. I mean, so there's all different goals. And so we have a little group that we get together. We called it the Red Barn Writers Guild because, again, we wanted to show respect for the, you know, we're both from the rural area in the Midwest, and the values that come out of that agricultural farming background, it's very important to us, and you'll find it throughout our writing in the themes that we use. And so we meet once a month, and people come and you know, share their writing, and then we do some friendly critiquing and encouraging, and then we... And we eat together, too. We eat. So we have dinner and look at our writing. And then it's just a nice group. It's not intense. You know, it's nothing like that. But anybody is welcome to come. You can go to my website, and there's a spot where you can there's a page that's just for the Red Barn Writers Guild. You can contact me when our next meeting is coming up. I do put out a little like a homework sheet to kind of direct the meeting that we're going to have, but we don't stick to it all, you know, like we'll do other things too, but that's something to get us going. And so I have the adult Red Barn Writers Guild, and then I also have a young Red Barn Writers Guild. So if there are teenagers, preteens out there who would like to be involved in the writing group, they're more than welcome to, again, go to the website, go to that page, and contact me. There's a contact sheet right on that page, and, you know, we can get you hooked up.
So do they have to live near you in Iowa, or can they participate virtually?
Well, actually, what I've done recently, and I'm still learning all the social media stuff, but what I've done recently is I've constructed a Facebook page that's private. Only people that are in the group can have access to the group, but that's a way, that's a place where we can come and share our writing. You know, right now we're not having a lot of good weather, so that kind of helped because we actually have people that travel quite a distance to come to our group, which is why we're also meeting once a month, so on a Saturday, so that kind of helps with that. But you can't always make it, so having the Facebook page is a wonderful way to still share your writing and still get observations back from people and kind of keep the ball rolling for you.
That is a wonderful way to support young writers and new writers in a safe environment to get feedback.
Yep.
So speaking of feedback, one of the things I know that we had talked about in our discussions for this interview was how scary it can be to put your work out there. And
yeah,
that idea of the criticism that can come your way. And there's an interesting story with Rescuing Love, the book that is coming out in March. Can you tell us a little bit about two things? First, about the story of Rescuing Love, and then your story about writing it.
Well, it is a contemporary romance, okay, and it's published by a Christian publisher, so it's, you know, not a graphic romance. But it does have an edge to it. You know, when you look at Christian literature, and a lot of times it really diminishes the struggles that people have. If you're a Christian, everything's roses for you, you know. And now, you know, I don't know if it's the last 15 years maybe, you know, I don't have any hard facts on that, but about that time, there's been a movement with Christian literature where a little more edge has been allowed in. Themes that before were prohibited are now open to being talked about and explored through writing. And it's more, it's not that bad things won't happen to you if you're a Christian, but how do you handle those trials when they come your way? And so I'm really supportive of that because I think it can be a real turnoff if somebody, you know, you think about inspiring people. If somebody picks up a book and they read it and they go, well, I guess I'm not Christian enough because bad things still happen to me, or, you know, I'm not good enough in some way. I would never want somebody to feel that way after reading one of my novels. So it's good that we're able to talk about some of these hard topics. And so my book, actually, what I like to call it is it's edgy Christian fiction. So there are themes in it that aren't pretty and are hard. You know, when you think about if I had to endure that or whatever, it would be hard. And so I hope that it'll have a real feel to it, you know, as people are reading it. So it is a contemporary romance from a Christian publisher, Tate Publishing out of Oklahoma. And I don't know, what do I want to say about it? It's a young couple in their mid-20s, and because I don't want to do any spoiler thing here, you know, in their mid-20s.
No, you can do the teasers part, though.
I could tell you what's on the back of the book. How about that?
That'd be great.
It says, because I'm looking at a book here, out of college, Emily McBride had her dream husband and thought she had it all, until 3 years later, doubts are planted in her mind that Daniel is unfaithful to her and their unborn child. Amidst her confusion, tragedy strikes, and their baby is lost along with Emily's memories of Daniel and their life together. Confused, alone, and with no knowledge of her husband, Daniel is forced to send Emily back to live with her parents. A year later, through a series of chance encounters, Emily encounters her husband again, but she doesn't even remember his name. As they seemingly start anew, she feels the pull of old memories as their relationship begins to blossom. Can she remember what all her husband has done for her since the accident? Even as the past creeps back in and memories resurface, Rescuing Love will only be possible if they face their inner demons and learn to trust again. So there you go.
That's a good teaser.
Thank you.
You're
so
welcome.
Hopefully people will be drawn to try it and, you know, give me some feedback. I mean, really, that's what I'm looking for, too. You know, when you started, we were talking about criticism as well. And so through my author website and my Facebook page and both places, you know, I've gotten some comments back that I've been very pleased with and, you know, hoping to hear more as you know, because it's just available right now. So some people are still in the process of reading. And it's an e-book or paperback at this point and pre-release. So, you know,
and there
Melanie,
is a link in the show notes.
Okay.
So
you know,
people can if they want to order now.
Okay. I was just going to say, you know, when I think about criticism and, you know, it is a big deal. You spend a lot of time writing a book. And even if those characters are not you, you know, you've really invested so much of your, you know, lots of stuff comes into it. And there's a little piece of you in everything that you write. And it is really scary to put out there the world and hope that people be kind as they, you know, get back to you on it. And, you know, but I kind of look at criticism, again, it's my critical thinking. I know that this book will not be for everybody because no book is for everybody, but if people loved it or if they hate it, I'm okay with that because I think that as long as it inspires some strong emotion, it did its job. You know, it touched you in some way. And sometimes when we think we hate something, it'll work on us for a while, you know, and then we'll come back and say, well, wait a minute. You know, that thing that bothered you about it will continue in your head for a while, and then you'll come back and say, oh, wait, maybe I need to rethink that, or it'll connect in some way that you hadn't connected it before. But the hardest part for me for criticism is if people are indifferent because, you know, it's like they were totally unaffected by what you wrote, and you put so much into your writing that you just don't want people to be totally unaffected. So that's the hard part for me. But I also think that criticism, you can, you know, if there's some negative thoughts or, you know, comments that come back, you can say, okay, that's going to destroy me and I'm not going to write anymore. Or you can just use it to build you up and to be a better writer. Like I said, I'm still evolving. I know that my book is not perfect. I know that my writing's not perfect. I'm not a perfect person. So I have to continue to grow and to just evolve. So comments, whether, you know, positive or negative, they all help you to do that.
That's a wonderful perspective to take. And one that I think helps bridge from, I think I have a story to tell to, I'm going to write it and put it out there for the world so that it can inspire those with whom it resonates. And like you said, not every writing is for everybody, which
no.
is important to recognize that it will resonate with some people, but not all. And
right.
to have the courage to put that out there. And speaking of courage, you impressed me so much as we prepared for this interview and talking about your research and what went into your decision to self-publish versus to be published, and you went with a publisher and your research about the publisher. So, because since we have about 10 minutes left is all, and we've got several questions that I still want to get to, but particularly from that question and decision about publishing, what would you say has been the biggest surprise or unexpected consequence of going with a publisher, of really having that physical book or an e-book?
You know, I think it's the biggest surprise for me is the time commitment because, you know, you have in your mind when you're going to be a writer, you think, okay, I'm going to be a writer. I'm going to write this book. I'm going to hand this off to my publisher, and they're going to work their magic, and then I'm going to go write my second book and hand it off, et cetera. And that's sort of what happens. And if it ever did, I don't know if that ever was how it looked, but it's not how it looks anymore. So, you know, as an author, you have to be so involved with every step from, you know, you write it, then it's a book, now you got to market it, and you have to get out there and connect with the public and, you know, do all of these things that, you know, it's a business that you're running, and it takes so much time. It's I found it to be a lot of fun because I like to learn new things all the time. And so each step of it, I have just embraced it as such. What am I going to learn from this? I'm going to, you know, take this first book and go full circle with it so I know what the whole thing is. And then from there, I can sit back and say, is this something I want to do again? And so far, I've been totally happy with the process. So I'm sure it'll be a yes. But there's a part of me that says, just get the full circle down so that you know how everything connects, what all the true commitments are, and then see if it fits, you know, your life and your goals and all that stuff. So so far it's been a lot of fun. It's been tiring. It's been a lot of work. You know, I don't go to bed before 2 a.m. too much, you know, and up at 6. And, you know, and sometimes I'm things going sleepy, you know. And I should be sleeping, but I'm thinking about things. So, you know, it's, and on the weekend, sometimes, a lot of times I'll pick Friday or Saturday night because I don't have any commitment in the morning, and I'll write, work on my stuff clear through the night. You know, the house is quiet, everybody's asleep, I'm not needed for anything. And I just, you know, hit that tired enough mode that I can really make some good headway. And that seems to work for me.
Okay, well, we've got about 8 minutes. So I'm going to start doing my wrap-up questions. And if anyone is listening and wants to call, you still can. The number's 347-215-8390. Or if you're in the chat room and have a question or comment for Carol, please type it in and I will be sure to share it with her. So in our closing questions, first, do you have any new projects in the works that you can talk about?
I do. I actually have a suitcase of projects, as I mentioned. And after Rescuing Love was done, I went to the suitcase and thought I better work on something else now. And I went through and was intrigued by this story I had started, and I just ended it abruptly. Like I was interrupted while I was writing, and it bugged me because I was like, I wonder where I was going with this. Because I have no idea. So I thought, okay, I guess I will figure it out along the way. So that's what I'm working on. And what I do, because you don't actually have a title until you get into kind of the editing process. So I always use one of my characters' first names. And so one of the characters' name is Samantha, and so that's what I'm calling it. So if you're on my website and you're looking at that, that's the book I'm talking about. That book is kind of shaping up to be interesting. My husband's grandfather served in World War II, and so my mother-in-law gave me a tote of letters that he had written back to his wife and children here while he was serving overseas, and this is a multi-generational love story that I'm working on, and so I'm going to try to use some of these letters in a way that will inspire this book, so that should be fun.
Oh, it sounds like fun. Carol, what is a question that you wish I would have asked you but didn't? And what is your answer?
I'm sure we've covered all the questions I would have had, Melanie.
Oh, thank you, Carol. But I'm sure there's something that you were thinking, oh, you know, she could have asked me this.
Nope, I think we've prepped so well for this that we have everything in order here, so I'm pretty satisfied with the questions. And
well, for people who are listening, either now or in the future, how do you prefer they contact you if they have questions or want to connect with you?
I think the best way is through my author website or through my Facebook page. Either way is fine. There's contact forms on the website and, you know, through Facebook, as people, you know, post things. So either's fine.
And I do believe both of those links are in the show notes for this show, so people can just click on those links and connect with you that way. Okay. In the last couple minutes, what are one or two key messages you want listeners to take away from our interview?
I think that a couple of messages that I would like people to take away is to never stop working on your dreams. I mean, here I am, I'm 45, and I'm doing something that's been a lifelong dream. And, you know, I think that you should always just keep keep working towards your dreams. And then the other thing is, you know, at the end of the day, the true value of our lives is in our relationships. And we really should think really hard about that and how we're going to care for our relationships. And I'm not just talking about romantic relationships, I mean relationships of all kinds. And, you know, we should really care for people, you know, in our lives and really go that extra mile to connect with and to help others. I think that's very important to me.
Well, and I think that's definitely a good perspective to have and a good thought to take through each day is to, yeah, what am I doing that's making that positive difference? How am I helping people? Because when we help other people, we have a chemical shift in our brains. When we see acts of kindness, we have that same chemical shift in our brains. So the giver, the receiver, and the observer all have a positive response when there's that act of kindness and that gift. And I want to thank you for your act of kindness and being with me and sharing your journey with writing Rescuing Love and bringing that story to the world and your support of writers with the Red Barn Writers Guild. And I hope that we can have an interview in the future where we're talking about another book or another project that you have. I would love to help you promote that as well. So thank you so much, Carol, for investing your time to share your journey with me and with my listeners.
Well, thank you for, you know, having me on the show. And, you know, it's been fun. But, you know, it would be, you know, I was so nervous because it's the first one, but, you know, that I've done. But I think
it
went well. So we survived it.
Yes, well. You did. Well, thank you so much. And I wish you the best of success. And if you are interested in where Carol is having book signings for Rescuing Love, you can find that on her website at caroldenicus.com. Click on the links in the show notes, and I hope that you enjoy the story and the process. And if you're interested in writing and want to connect with Carol, please, please do so. She has an amazing giving heart, and she is really down to earth and will tell you the truth. So please connect with Carol. Thanks again, Carol, for being here. And until next time, ladies and gentlemen, please take an action on something you heard. Get the book, read a story of any kind. And until next time, stay safe. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to Spark Radio with Miss Melanie. Please share this show link with those you believe would enjoy and benefit from listening. We invite you to join us for upcoming shows with special guests and more sparks. May a spark you heard ignite a positive change in your life. Good day.